So I'm constantly amazed. Oh, I probably don't have to speak so loudly. I'm constantly amazed at the interconnectedness of everything, of all of this, of life, of humanity. I have to say, I recently watched myself presenting at a press conference, and I was like this all the time, and I'm trying not to do that so much so it doesn't distract you. So let me pull my hands back a little bit and hold on to the podium. Hannah said, but Mom, it's just who you are. I'm like, yeah, but it distracts. So I have a story to share, something that happened just yesterday that was not going to be a part of my sermon, but it forced its way in. Hannah and I went to the Renaissance Fair yesterday, partly due to the generosity of our own Daryl Yoder, who gave us a free ticket because he works there. As I was waiting in line to purchase my ticket, I got to talking with this woman in front of me. She was a now single 43-year-old woman. She was obviously younger than I am. And we just, you know, how you connect with people, you start talking. And then she said her oldest child is 26. And I was like, oh my word, you started young, yes. She was beautiful and joyful and chatty, talked about the fair, how she brings one of her kids almost every year, but this year she was alone. She's a runner. She used to live down in the southern end, just around the corner from where I live. So we had all of these connections. Then she told me that she lost her oldest a year ago. Never said how, but we cried together in line at the Renaissance Fair. And then we talked some more, and she told me how that loss empowered her to leave a bad relationship and how she moved so she could be closer to her other three adult living children. And at some point she said, I know it's cliche, but we're all in this together, right? And I had this like, oh my gosh, worlds are colliding moment. I was like, that's the name of my sermon tomorrow that I'm preaching about. And then we kind of almost started crying again. And then she went and purchased her ticket. She was ahead of me in line and turned around and handed me a ticket and said, I got this for you. Enjoy your first Ren Fair and pay it forward. And she walked into the crowd, and I didn't see her all afternoon. So we're all in this together. I'm being ambitious with my goals this morning, but my friend in the ticket line inspired me to hope that we can have moments of raw connection, talking about hard things, laughing and enjoying each other and the world around us, even in the midst of the painful realities that we carry. Earlier this year, Linda Crockett of Samaritan's Counseling Center came and gave a presentation here at CMCL. Linda is kind of the guru of safe church training in the area. I don't know if she'd like to be called that, but she just is. And she spoke about best practices that churches can adopt to ensure that their churches are doing the very best they can to keep the children in their care safe. She challenged us, how can we have a safe church policy if only those working with children go through the training and are familiar with that policy and the rest of the church doesn't know it? The number here, that number of people here who have gone through safe church training is less than 50%. She highly recommended that we regularly bring the topic to the pulpit so the greater community gains a better understanding of our policy, what's behind it, how we are all responsible in creating a safe space in this place, because we're all in this together. In addition, I come to this task holding the lectionary reading from Luke, the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, and I'm also continuing with our theme of hidden figures. So that's a lot, but believe it or not, they flow together really well. Let's begin by looking at this parable of Jesus from the scripture. The author introduces the parable by explaining that Jesus told this parable to, quote, some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. So it's really a tale of correction, right? Correction for those who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. For those of us who are familiar with the Enneagram, I have a confession to make. I'm a one, the good person, the perfectionist. And for those of you who don't know the Enneagram, you'll still get the picture. The issue of trusting myself to have a clear and right sense of what is righteous is my constant shadow work. I work really hard to not be judging and critical of others, but me thinking that I have a sense of the right thing haunts my every waking moment in just about every area of my life. You can talk to my family, my colleagues. from my marriage to parenting to pastoring to community organizing. And what this looks like is I try really hard to do the right thing all the time. And that can be exhausting. Causing as little harm to other people as necessary because I know what it means to be hurt by others. Those are not bad goals to have. But if I am to be honest with myself, and I guess now with all of you, I think I sometimes come to the temple, to this temple or any temple, as the Pharisee, with my self-righteous hat on, at least trusting in my own righteousness, if not also sometimes holding others in contempt. Oh, I don't judge people for drinking alcohol or having sex outside of marriage. Those edges are way past for me. But I do judge people for judging those who drink alcohol and who have sex outside of marriage. And you know what? This too is a type of haughtiness. This is the truth of my struggle. I have another confession to make. There is, oh, so much more to me than the face of the Pharisee, right? Than the shadow side of my one personality. I have other hidden figures, if you will, within me that also identify parts of my authentic self. There are times I am also that tax collector who comes to the temple hanging my head saying simply, I messed up, I'm sorry. I suggest that all of us consider ourselves within this framework, that we, each of us, has hidden figures within us, parts of our true selves, our authentic selves, our human selves, that are sometimes conflicting, and we want to label them, right, as sinner or saint, as good or bad, but we don't always need to be labeled as polar opposites. Sometimes the varied faces of who we are, the hidden figures within us, our shadow sides that keep us humble, or our joyous sides that are sometimes too shy to be revealed, are just different roles of the complex truth of our own humanity. And I wonder if we think of ourselves in this light, if we might be able to be a bit more open to a more whole, more accurate, and more authentic picture and presentation of who we actually are in our struggles and in our strengths as the Pharisee and as the tax collector and as, oh, so much more. I wonder if we think of others in this light, if we might be able to be more open and accepting of all of their humanity, seeing a more accurate and authentic picture of who our neighbor is, and in so doing, creating a more safe space. I want to emphasize that we, all of us, have multiple faces, hidden figures, that combine to tell the true story of who we are. And it is my desire that this church building and people who enter here find space where they are free to reveal these many hidden figures. But that would be a test of our love as a community. Because are we prepared to love and accept any face that is revealed among us? I'll leave that question for us all to ponder in our hearts. Are we prepared to accept any face that is revealed among us? And should we? I'm grappling with what it means to have a safe community, of what it means to be a part of creating safe space, of what it means to be not judging and yet to see the truth of those around us. Jesus told this parable for the haughty to learn that humility is better than bragging. But in order to be humble, we have to start by being honest with ourselves, as honest as we can about who we are. And we need to use discernment to decide how and when to trust others. We cannot hide behind naivete. Because sometimes some of the hidden figures within us consistently do damage to others. And sometimes to create a safe community, there are figures that cannot be free to move among us. I want to show you a video. That's your cue. a video that Linda Crockett shared with us as a part of her presentation. So some of you who were here for that presentation saw this already. It is a song. It is Lady Gaga. It's the only song I know by her. So please, I hope I don't offend those who are Lady Gaga fans. I do warn you, there are two times she says hell, and I hope that doesn't offend you. I hope you can see beyond that if that does offend you. My love.
You tell me it gets better. It gets better in time. You say to pull myself together. Pull it together. You'll be fine. Tell me what the hell do you know? What do you know? Tell me how the hell could you know? How could you know? Till it happens to you.
One in four girls and one in six boys will be sexually abused by the age of 18 in the United States. Statistics have not changed that much in the past 20 years, so you can look around the room and do the math. Since the exposure of the Catholic Church scandal of hiding perpetrators for the sake of protecting the institution, we have known that churches are one place that people go to find easy access to children. And just to be clear, the numbers of abuse accusations in other denominations are roughly the same as in the Catholic Church. We have a safe church policy here for three reasons. We want to be sure that children are not abused here. And if they have been abused elsewhere, we want them to find space here to speak their hidden truth in order to find help and healing. Number two, we want to be sure that our adults working with children are protected from being falsely accused by any hurting or desperate individual. And thirdly, we want to be sure that no one finds themselves in a situation where they have an opportunity to act on their most base desires to become a predator or perpetrator on our watch and in this building. We aren't trying to make life difficult for everyone else in the church by forcing people to jump through hoops for no reason. We're taking seriously our responsibility to create a safe space for all. 90% of those abused know their abuser. The idea of stranger danger is a myth of old that we can dispel with. And we don't go over all these statistics to scare folks or that people might gain a greater sense of fear, but that we might have a greater awareness. It is not possible to create a safe community if we deny to see the reality of the world in which we live. So our policy is a great short 18 very fine print pages long. Hardly anyone's going to read it. So we have a Safe Church Committee, and we've created this little kind of Safe Church 101 front and back that is an easy read. We're not going to read it now. Don't be worried. But I am going to highlight some parts. You have this in your hand, I think, if you picked up a bulletin. We desire for all at our church to know and believe that they are known and loved by God. You've heard that a few times if you've been coming to this church at all. From this knowledge, we believe that we are compelled to live and move and interact with one another in ways that are respectful and life-giving and not damaging or unnecessarily hurtful. Our Safe Church policy comes out of this conviction. We strive to ensure that every living being coming through our doors will be safe. Showing love and affection in proper ways is so important. This policy is to provide guidelines for that love to be spread in healthy and safe ways. And then it has four sections. The first section goes through definitions of confidentiality and what is child abuse. The second section just clarifies what we say is healthy touch and how to set boundaries. We help teach children in our classrooms. We go through Circle of Grace and Our Whole Lives training, so they are given language to help identify what's healthy boundaries and how they can say, no, please don't yell at me, that hurts me. Please don't enter my circle of grace. And then the third section, the practices that we have implemented here to create safe space. And then finally, what it means to become an approved adult. Everyone who works with children, we get their criminal background checks. We look at their child abuse history. And then they go through training. I'm curious if there are any people in the congregation right now who have been through our Safe Church training in the past 2 years. If you would just stand up for a second so we get a sense of the numbers. Yeah. Thank you so much for being a part of that. Living and worshiping in community, we have an obligation to love one another well, holding one another accountable for the safety of our children and our adults is one of the best ways we can do this. Let us work together in respect and diligence to keep our community safe because we are all in this together. I hope to have some real connections and conversations with more of you in the coming months, like I had with a stranger standing in the ticket line at the Ren Fair. Space where we can laugh and cry and show a few of the hidden figures that we each carry. Building trust and friendship, finding comfort and empathy, moving in and out of the lives of our children here, showing the example of what a loving community looks like. Together. Amen.